Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy. Oh, wow. That is a red light on that microphone right there. There we go. Sorry, a little setup issues.
Blast the brain out of my skull, Sean.
Now you know how I feel.
Tattered remains of my brain. Got to latch on to all these remaining neurons.
That's it, man. That's it. Hey, welcome in, everybody. Day four out here at the Greenbrier. Fourth and final day out here at the Greenbrier today. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a lovely overcast West Virginia morning. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm good. I'm excited to watch padded practice today.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to do four in a row these days, four padded practices in a row.
Does that make them soft?
Well, I mean, it's negotiated.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know.
Not an answer.
It's a softer environment.
Yeah.
You know? I could take a Marine coming off a 20-year tour in Afghanistan, and if I put him out here to do this schedule, does it make him soft that he's not allowed to go 4 days in a row?
I got you. No, you know? It was negotiated by their union.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to be like, I take my 20-year combat vet, and what am I going to do? Go out there yesterday and be like, hey, bro, you're soft.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you're out here, no pads, are you?
I won't say it to their faces. Sure.
No, you would never. That's my point. Yeah. You're going to be the hardest dude.
Well, to be clear, I'm very soft. I'm just wondering if they're, you know, getting closer to my end of the spectrum.
You could be the toughest dude in the world, and it is what it is. So
it's been a good week, man.
It's been a good week. I think that the practices are real crisp when you come up here and guys aren't getting fatigued. I think D'Amico kind of uses the heat in Houston in those first couple weeks as the closest as you can get to a Junction Boys environment.
Yeah.
But then you got to start worrying about injuries. I was talking to somebody from the Texans last night, and it was interesting talking about the difficulties of being in a setting like this. It's really cool, and you get this kind of summer camp environment where everybody's all together. There's not all the distractions and everything. But when it comes to the medical side of things, you got to get an MRI, you're driving like 30 or 40 minutes away. You just don't have everything right in place the way you typically do.
Yeah, logistically, there's some layers to the logistical part of this thing as compared to Houston.
I would never suggest the Astros come up here because it would be a perfect excuse not to do MRIs. It's like, pretty sure it looks like the femur is sticking out of the skin.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's who knows?
30 minutes.
Who really knows
away
of these things?
I can't go to 30 minutes.
We'll put him on the 10-day IL and see what happens.
See if it grows back. Yeah. See if the bone heals. So, so we get a padded practice today. And what are we rooting for out here? What do you want to see in the padded practice?
I want to see some more physicality out of the offensive line. Yeah. I think that right now, without trying to analyze everything, when you're watching a practice and there's 22 guys out on the field and you only get one shot at watching a play, you don't obviously get to see everything. This is why coaches watch film for 12 hours a day to try to see everything. Some of the things that do stick out, though, are when you get good movement from the offensive line in the run game. And I feel good enough about the defense that I'm not going to be worried about the defense if the offensive line is getting good push on an inside run. That I'm like, okay, you know what? That's a good defense, and this offense is getting push against them. I feel good about that. That's what and we saw some examples of that on Tuesday. And then obviously, I'd love to see CJ just start to connect downfield a little bit better and a little bit more.
Downfield is the big thing because, as you've pointed out, the short game's been fine. The quick game's been fine. When the first read's been open, it's been fine. Like if they did that thing, you know, like we saw the Astros game the other night, the starter, that Quantrill, they divided up like how he does through the first part, the batting average against the first time through the lineup, second time through the lineup, and third time through the lineup, and they were starkly different. I feel like if you did the same thing with CJ, but with like passer rating, the quick game, the passer rating is very high right now. It's like 105.2.
Yeah.
The intermediate game is probably a little less so, especially because he's throwing a lot of interceptions in that part of the field. And downfield, it's not great because they just haven't connected a lot. He hasn't had time, really. He hasn't had a lot of attempts downfield.
Yeah.
He's gotten sacked. When he drops back and he's trying to hit a slow developing play or something that somebody's running a go route, this isn't even just cliche, literally more often than not, it's a sack as opposed to him uncorking something that goes that overthrows or gets intercepted.
And he's trying to play it honest. You know, when there's no tackling, a young quarterback would just stand there and wait and wait and wait and then throw it and hey, yay, it's glory. But it's not realistic. I think CJ is, to his credit, yeah, he's trying to play it honestly and get rid of the ball on time. So it's either a credit to the defense or it's just signs of a laggard offense, which we, and I keep reminding myself of this more than anything, that it, looking at it realistically, you've got a brand new offense, you've got an offensive line that's still in flux, obviously, and you're going up against a defense that really right now looks like they're as close to firing all on all cylinders as you could be this time of year. So I shouldn't expect that the offense is going to look great, but it's at some point, You know, you get increasingly nervous until you actually see the offense click at some point.
As someone who's watched both practices, padded practices so far, and the practices back in Houston, I am rooting for the offense today.
Right.
Just based on everything I've seen in camp. You know what I mean? Like, I want the offense. I want to go into that first preseason game, especially because I have my doubts that we're going to see the first team offense in that preseason game.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. I don't know if D'Amico's meeting with the media today or not. I know you're meeting with D'Amico today.
I
after
am?
Practice, yeah.
I better get ready for that.
Yeah,
no, I'm excited. I haven't sat down with him in a one-on-one interview environment.
Yeah.
You know, I've had conversations with him at times since he's been back, but just not in an interview environment.
I planted a couple questions with you last night that I want the answers to.
Well, you want there's a couple of questions. I'm glad you told me to ask a couple of questions that kind of also involve me.
Yeah.
I hate making it about myself while I'm interviewing somebody, obviously. But, you know, obviously, D'Amico and I have a little bit of a shared history.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm just intrigued because you've given your perspective on what it's like, what it was like to play with D'Amico as a rookie. I'm curious D'Amico's perspective from him as putting himself back in his shoes as a rookie and being in the huddle with all you vets.
Yeah. And, well, my first impression of D'Amico as a rookie that first season was, you know, everything everybody always says about him, how mature he is, how he is just such a great feel for the mental part of the game and all of that. He was freakishly mature for a rookie in that role. But that was me looking at it from my perspective. I'd like to know just how what did it feel like when all of a sudden he's thrust into it and he's kind of expected to be a leader of a, and it was a bad team too. Well, it wasn't a horrible team, but
that's it. Well, that team went 6-10 that year.
Right, but they after going 2-14 the year before, it wasn't. They made some strides.
Yeah. But I
say they because I was on IR after a few games.
Right. But like being in that huddle, looking into the eyes of guys with mortgages and kids.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I say they so I can separate myself from the 6-10
from
team.
The 6-10 season.
I'm pretty sure we were undefeated when I got
Seth
injured.
Seth only associates himself with the Jags teams that went to the AFC title.
I'm like a really bad little league dad. How are your kids doing?
Oh,
he only talks
God.
About like two of the three kids.
Oh, man.
Doesn't talk about Cooper. I feel like if Archie kept forgetting about his third kid.
Did Seth only play 2 years in the NFL? Well, why is that? He only talks about 1998 and 1999.
That was the straw that stirred the drink.
That's not true. Seth is proud of his heritage as a Jag and as a Texan. Speaking of Little League, the Astros lost yesterday, 6-4 to the Marlins. Still won the series, though. That felt kind of good. Although the lead, I believe, is only two games in the AL West right now.
Yeah.
Seattle is barking right now, right behind the Astros. And Spencer Arrighetti, I guess not the greatest box score if you look at it. 3 2/3 innings, 11 hits. He only walked one. He struck out five. Had a bunch of swing and miss. You and I didn't get to watch it firsthand yesterday because we were doing stuff. It was an afternoon game. Yeah. But everybody who I've listened to or talked to has said that the box score is drastically different than what it actually looked like.
He gave up at least four hits to soft contact in the infield. But then he also did – he hung some pitches out over the plate. So it was a mixed bag of – it wouldn't have been the greatest outing even if he hadn't had bad luck with some of that.
Gave up a home
contact.
Run. I mean, that's
right.
You know, yeah.
But it was in a first game back, it wasn't like anything to raise the alarm flags or anything. So far, so good. You won the series. Let's just keep getting guys back healthy.
Get a day off and you go to head up to Yankee Stadium this weekend for a series with the Yankees.
To an absolutely miserable fan base.
Yeah, they're not having fun right now.
Look, the last month or month and a half, ever since the injuries really started taking their toll, there's been some drama.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, all can be erased and forgotten if you just – all I'm asking is that you sweep the Yankees in New York City.
That's it. That's all we ask. And then possibly when they come back, it sounds like we might get Christian Javier back.
Mm.
That's pretty tasty.
Yeah.
I'm hoping Amy and I are going to that game on Monday, the one where Bregman's coming back and Correa's making his home return. You pile Christian Javier coming back from Tommy John.
All the World Series heroes back in the mix.
That's a pretty fun Monday night right there. Yeah. So that'll be good. Javier, I guess, was hitting about 94 on the gun on Tuesday in his Tuesday or Monday in his rehab start.
94, 95 pretty consistently for the past few weeks.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And that was kind of where when he was peak Javier, that was where he was living.
Yeah.
He was in that 94, 95 range. So that'll be good to see Christian Javier back. So we're live here, day four at the Greenbrier. Not much yesterday because it was only a walkthrough. Really, the only thing we got yesterday was seeing Damian Pierce and Christian Harris back.
Yeah, Damian Pierce and Christian Harris. It tells you where we are in training camp. The people were genuinely excited to find out about where they were in a freaking walkthrough. Were they running with the ones?
Were they running with the twos?
Right.
Yeah, that's what I would be asking.
The depth chart's the funniest one because D'Amico just flat out said 2 days ago when asked about the depth chart that the team put out that he had just himself learned that there was a depth chart that was put out. He had no say in it whatsoever. It's basically the PR staff or the media relations staff doing the same thing we're doing, is trying to project the starting lineup and just throwing it out
there. Are you a little surprised? I know it's a walkthrough.
Yeah.
And you're going to laugh at me when I ask this question, I'm pretty sure. But are you at all surprised Damian Pierce? Nick Chubb didn't practice yesterday. We should point that out. Nick Chubb is nursing some sort of injury. He wasn't out here yesterday. He walked off with a trainer 2 days ago. During 11-on-11. So were you surprised at all that Damian Pierce's very first practice back, he just boom, like plunked back there? Or is it just like, screw this, it's a walkthrough, it's not a big deal?
Who are you going to put there instead? For one, this is what coaches tell you all the time during training camp. Guys, don't worry about the depth chart. It's going to change every day. This is what the coaches tell the media. It's not like it's fluff and nonsense. It's exactly what they tell the players every day.
Yeah.
Guys, don't worry too much about the depth chart. We're going to be mixing things up. You're going to take some reps with the twos at times. Don't read into it. Mm. And sometimes it does mean something, but sometimes it genuinely is just shuffling things around. So if you look at wherever the depth chart was last year, Damian Pierce would have been above a Gumbawale or anybody else.
I think Woody Marks had earned some reps with the ones in the walkthrough.
It's not like Damian had missed the first 2 weeks for punitive reasons or something.
That's true.
It's not like he got caught out past curfew or something, and that's why he needs to earn his way back out.
Anybody,
right?
So, all right, Payne and Pendergast with you, off and running on a Thursday. CJ Stroud met with the media yesterday. And this C.J. Stroud's mood has been a big topic, and body language has been. He was asked about his body language yesterday. Yeah, I want to hear from C.J. Stroud on that. And I have a question for the audience based on something that happened in West Virginia with Seth and I last night that I want to get the audience's take on. So be ready to get your texting fingers ready to go at 713-572-4610. Stay there. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast live from West Virginia. All right, will C.J. Stroud play on Saturday against the Vikings? He was asked about that yesterday in his media availability. He wants to play. Here's what he had to say.
It's up to the coaches, you know, whatever they feel is, you know, suit for me. I like to be out there and, you know, get hit once or twice or whatever just to, you know, feel the emotion again. It's a little different than practice. But whatever, you know, D'Amico decides, and I'm good with that.
If you were D'Amico Ryans, would you play C.J. Stroud in the first team on Saturday against the Minnesota Vikings?
Oh, that's a tough question. I got to put myself in the brain of D'Amico and everything else.
That's probably a pretty fun place to live, actually.
Probably less tempestuous than mine.
Yeah.
In his heart, he wants it. Well, he'd love to play everybody, but you got to balance out the injury risk.
Yeah.
I think I would want to just to, for the reason, every reason that CJ just said, but to start to get some of the timing down and to start to, CJ, get some reps, having command with an actual play clock in an environment where it really, really matters. It's like anything else you do in life, rehearsing a speech. It's going to be different when you're rehearsing the speech versus when you get out in front of an audience and you have that pressure of, you and I know, when you try to record something, sometimes it takes like 20 shots when you're just recording it by
only
yourself.
Only 20 for me?
But when you have to do it live, you tend to do it better because of
your
the pressure
focus.
Of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I think about that during training camp a lot. I'm like, I'm watching the offense. I'm like, you know what? I just think, like, in NRG Stadium on a Sunday, when the lights are on, it's going to be a little more crisp than we've seen in camp. And plus, you're not going against Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson.
It's a different environment.
Yeah.
But they will be facing good pass rushers.
For sure.
The Vikings, I don't know how many of their starters on defense will play. They're playing J.J. Supposedly, according to the guy that we talked to last night here in West Sulphur Springs, West Virginia, we ran into a Vikings fan.
That's right.
And he was saying, because I haven't checked back with the Minnesota media on this, that J.J. McCarthy is going to play, but it's going to be with, by and large, the second string offense. I wouldn't want to see that necessarily. If that is in fact the case, that guy was pretty drunk. But I'd like to see CJ with 10 other guys that he's going to be playing with this year.
Yeah.
Going against a Brian Flores defense that I think Brian Flores isn't the type of defensive coordinator that's going to go plain vanilla defense in the playoffs. He wants to start doing all of his disguised coverages and everything else like that. So it's a good challenge. And it's against the team that the Texans really struggled against last year. What, you know, the biggest thing that I remember from the Vikings game last year was the four straight pre-snap penalties by the offensive line.
Me too.
It was not a clean operation. The thing that I want this year before anything else is good, fundamentally sound offensive football in a clean operation. So if you could exercise some demons just by going into that stadium and looking like you actually know what the hell you're doing,
yeah.
I like that.
You said this to Clint and Ron yesterday, and I tend to agree with this. Like, even if you send CJ in there and he's just handing the ball off and you're running the ball,
yeah.
Because here's the thing, you're trying to work on your run game right now too.
Yeah.
There's plenty to work on for this offense. This offense needs reps in live football games. So I hope they play at least the requisite two series that you usually see the ones in a game like this. The only thing I'm fearful of is if all CJ does is go in and hand the ball off, then we're going to come in on Monday to a slew of texts about how CJ's shoulder is screaming right
now. Oh, yeah.
Well, if he doesn't throw the ball at all.
So be it. I'm glad you said that because I might have been one of those people. I'd be calling in to our show.
Like, let's go to Seth on a mobile.
Seth on a mobile in Pearland. Yeah. That I'm glad you said that, honestly, because I would have thought that because I had forgotten I had told Clint. Yeah. If he goes in and just hands the ball off, because the big challenge for CJ right now is not about learning how to be an NFL quarterback or anything. He's done that over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. It's the pre-snap operation. That's what's different for him. He's got more at his command, but more things to think about and worry about. So even if it were for 12 straight runs, he's got to come up to the line. He's got to ID everything on the defense that he's looking at. He might have to make some adjustments. And really, as most young quarterbacks start to learn over the course of their career, the quarterback being in command of the run game is just as important. If you want to be a top tier Hall of Fame caliber dude, you got to care as much about the run game as you do about the pass game. You're not in charge of the passing offense. You're in charge of the offense. That's why Tom Brady was genuinely 100% cool with some of those games where they would hand the ball off 40 times.
They're trying to win.
That's the right thing to do. It's not about your ego. It's not about your passing numbers or anything. So the pre-snap operation, him getting up to the line of scrimmage, making the right calls, anticipating what the defense is going to do, you can get that action, but without necessarily putting CJ in harm's way.
Okay, so this is the second offense that CJ's had to learn since coming into the NFL. Obviously, his rookie year, he comes in, he's learning Bobby Slowick's offense. He was asked yesterday to compare this training camp, learning a new offense, to his rookie year.
Yeah, it's a little different just because, like, I know, like, more coverages. I know, like, style, trees. I know coordinators. You know, I played against a good amount of, you know, different schemes. So it's a little easier. And then, you know, it's a lot of similarities from what Nick's bringing to what we're doing in the past. So it's a little similar in those lights, but it's not as hard as my rookie year was. Like learning Chinese. This year is a little bit of that, but not as much. It's a little easier.
It's a little more like French. Yeah. You know, at least it's the same alphabet, you know.
What's the easiest language to learn?
For me, it's been English.
English is kind of a pain in the ass.
No, it is. It's not the same as all those other European languages. Like, Spanish and French kind of look alike a little bit.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
The words are somewhat similar.
Yeah. I struggle with the English at times.
Struggle with all of them.
I think that when he starts talking about the coverages and the did you say style routes?
Yeah.
Style
trees.
Style trees, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. There is that, too. You know, there's one thing when you learn coverages while you're playing Madden, and there's the textbook, hey, this is cover two, this is cover three. But then you start to learn that, oh, okay, every defensive coordinator runs it a little bit differently. Cover three isn't always cover three. You know, it just looks different from team to team.
Yep.
And then from and I remember Kyle Shanahan talking about this a long time ago. I was actually just kind of sitting and listening to a conversation he was having with the Texans. But about that, it's also really important to remember that you got to know the guys that don't necessarily play it the right way. You can be a really smart quarterback. And this is, I think, sometimes where guys like Ryan Fitzpatrick, the super intelligent dudes, sometimes get themselves in trouble.
Yeah.
Because you know the way the cornerback should be playing, but you got to really also factor in, okay, but what about when he's playing it wrong?
Mm-hmm.
That you did, like, you could throw an interception because you think you know how it's going to look, but you got to know that, oh, no, but that guy plays it a little bit wrong or differently or whatever it is. Those are the little nuances that – It's like every step of the way, even as you think you've started to get some command of things, you realize, oh, wait, no, it's every step becomes that much more complex, there's mm-hmm. that much more to know. But also, by the way, you learned Mandarin Chinese. Now you got to learn Cantonese Chinese.
Yeah, different dialects, yes. Last one here from C.J. Stroud. His body language, I guess, was a big topic yesterday. He was asked about his efforts to improve his body language.
I don't know. It's hard. I'm very competitive. I don't like losing. I don't like making mistakes. But I would say I just, you know, in those moments, try to just breathe, relax, try to just calm my mind and, you know, just trying to just find something positive. Like, I always try to remind myself, like, this is cool. Like, I'm in the NFL, you know, like, you know, God didn't have to bless me with this, but he chose to, and I got to steward it the right way. And I don't think, like, I can complain every day if I really wanted to, but, like, there's no positive in that. So I try to just try that and just be grateful for the little things. And even though they're not little, they're huge, they're big. Like, I woke up this morning, you know, and I'm able-minded, able-bodied, and I'm just blessed to have that. So I would say that helps me be more positive and have better body language.
There's a psychological theory, Sean, about leadership, that a lot of the great leaders actually kind of, no matter how many books and autobiographies you read where, you know, billionaires try to present themselves in the best light, there's just a little touch on the depression side. Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King Jr., all those guys, they really struggled at times. Like, they would get, they would feel such a great responsibility, and they take it very, very seriously.
That's CJ.
That they would get kind of morose at times, you know, and you got, so it can be a positive.
Are we seeing that with CJ Stroud?
I don't know. Who the hell knows? I think he cares. Like,
he talked about his responsibility that,
yes,
he feels.
It's the curse of really, really caring.
Yeah.
So, and it's the people that are like the toxically positive people, they're like, hey, no, everything's great all the time. It's awesome. They can wear on you a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah.
So it's always about finding that balance. I think CJ takes it really, really seriously. And I think there's times where, yeah, like, part of his process and his maturation is that sometimes you got to learn that, okay, it's okay to let things go. And it's okay. And it's my responsibility to let things go.
Yeah.
That it's not that, okay, me caring doesn't release me from also having to be the guy that is moving forward and letting everybody else see that we're moving forward, even though, yep, I just made a mistake.
Okay, it's a good segue.
I'd be awful. You know, like, if, as a quarterback, oh, I'd be the worst.
Yeah.
The worst, because I hate myself so much after I make mistakes. You got to be a little bit, you got to find that balance of just like, okay, yeah, I made a mistake. I'm moving on, all right?
You don't have the requisite short memory on a mistake like that a quarterback needs to?
No, I think about it for 17 years. And I think about how I let everybody down.
Yeah, yeah. So
that's the biggest thing. I could see that with CJ. I think it's not that he, you know, is embarrassed or anything and he made a mistake. It's that you feel like you let everybody down. So you got to figure out a way to move past that.
All right.
That's why I never made it as a quarterback, Sean.
Okay, so.
Despite every year me walking into Dom Capers' office and saying, damn it, coach.
Put in a few plays
for me.
Don't
give me a few snaps at quarterback.
Yep.
And he'd be like, Seth, your attitude just isn't right.
You care too much.
Yes,
Seth.
Yeah.
Speaking of caring too much, I have a question for the audience. And it is, how long do you wait when you think somebody might be missing before you call the authorities?
Because Sean was a little bit worried about
About Seth last night. So we had a media dinner last night at the Jerry West Steakhouse here at the Greenbrier. So all the requisite media members, everybody who you guys follow, there's about 15 or 20 of us with the Texan staff there. Beautiful, nice steak dinner. And then we left about 9:30 or so. You and I are in separate cars because, you know, sometimes I go back to the house, sometimes you go back. We're in separate cars. So you wanted to go back to the house. Yeah. I was going to stop at this watering hole I found.
Yeah. We stopped at a bar. I was drinking a water.
Yep.
I'd had 2/3 of a glass of wine at dinner. Yep. Like, I felt good because I knew I was tired and I needed to get some sleep. So I'm sitting there having my water at the bar, and I grab the key. We have one key for the house.
We have one key. It's not it's not one of those push button security. Yeah. Like, it's not. It ain't advanced. So it's literally a key.
Right. So I've got one key. And I take it because I'm going home first, and you're going to be following me.
And you're just going to leave the door unlocked for me, yeah.
And then you fast forward 7 or 8 minutes later, you get to the house.
And you're not there.
And I'm not there.
You're not there.
Yeah.
And
it's dark out, everybody.
It is dark, dark. Yeah. Yeah. And so I go to the front door. It's locked. Obviously, we locked it. I'm like, maybe we happen to leave the back door open.
Yeah.
Back door's locked. And then so now I'm waiting like 10 minutes or so, and there's no Seth. And you should have
no
been.
And there's no cell reception. Once you get out of the village here, because of all these mountains and everything, there's no cell reception.
I can't
whatsoever.
Make a phone call to find you. There's no, I can't make a phone call.
If I could have texted you, I would have said, Sean, enable Wi-Fi calling on your phone.
Right.
You did have access to that. But for all intents and purposes, you in that moment, you didn't know how to get a hold of me.
I didn't know how to get a hold of you. So I get in my car and drive back into town, 10 minutes back into town, just so I can make a phone call to call you. And so I call you, it goes to voicemail, I leave you a message, I'm texting, it's going, turns out.
What had happened was, I was thinking about some things, and
you missed the turn.
And I hadn't turned my GPS on while I still had cell phone service. Right. So I got to a point where all of a sudden I realized, like, I'm in a state park.
You almost got to Pennsylvania.
I never drove through a state park on the way back to the place again. And so I turned around and
you overshot it by a good amount.
I overshot it by a good because once I realized, like, I think I'd gone too far, I was like, all right, I'm gonna clock myself because I think it takes about 5 minutes. I didn't know if I'd been out of town for 1 minute or 30 minutes.
Right.
I was deep in thought, and but I knew that you were probably panicking, and I felt awful about it.
I was panicking a little bit, and I went back into town. So when my texts aren't going through, I'm getting your voicemail. And here's the other thing: you were tired.
Yeah.
And it's dark out. It's super dark. Yeah. There's no lights, and I thought, man, this is like one of those hotel rooms where you got those special shades that don't let the sunlight in. I was worried you drove into a ditch or something like that.
Yeah.
So the whole process started about 9:30 or 9:45.
Uh-huh.
By the time I was panicked looking for you, it's probably about 10:15 or so, maybe.
Oh, wow.
10:20?
Is that long?
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about the process of the two of us sort of leaving the bar.
No, I know.
Yeah,
I know.
No, it was like 10:15. It was
been like 45 minutes since you'd seen me.
Yeah, yeah. And so I'm like, man, at what point do I make a phone call to the authorities to go, hey man, my friend is missing. I'm literally wondering, because I've never been in that situation before.
Yeah.
Like, what is the etiquette there? Like, well, how long do I wait before I, now granted, the town that we're in here, White Sulphur Springs, the police here would probably welcome a phone call like that because they're bored stiff playing Monopoly or something at the police station.
And it's a town that's driven by tourism.
Yeah.
So they're kind of, they bend over backwards. A lot of times cops in small mountain towns like these, they almost feel like they're half cop, half like tourism board.
Yeah, yeah.
So they probably would have just sent somebody down the road just to be sure there was nobody off the road or
something. Right. So,
but then you also, in the back of your mind, and you always feel guilty about this, you're like, it's likely no big deal, and it's going to be really embarrassing after the two city slickers from Houston, Texas.
You know what? Yes. General, yes. But I thought, like, just given the time of night it was and you know, we've been getting up super early, you know, and it was kind of late and it was dark outside. I was like,
and you could have I wouldn't have minded if you had been honest with a cop and being like, this guy's a little off.
Oh, I definitely would have been that. Yeah, I would have said that. I'm not going to make myself look like an idiot in this thing.
We don't usually let him drive on these trips. Because we just don't quite trust that he can get to where he needs to go.
Yeah. So y'all didn't learn the lesson from the whole one key thing from the Super Bowl trip, LOL.
Oh, yeah.
Do we have
a
key issue at the Super Bowl?
No, you had a parking pass issue because Clint
Oh, that was – that turned into something. Yeah.
Where you almost broke in Clint's wife's window to grab the
crowbar.
Parking pass off
It was sitting right there on the dashboard. Yeah.
It really wasn't a big deal.
It ended up not being a big deal.
It's so weird, though, because we grew up in an era where there were no cell phones.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I had one friend whose dad had a cell phone, and it was the size of, like, the nuclear suitcase there that they...
I had a bag phone.
Yeah, and that was, like, when I was in high school, maybe. That was the one cell phone that I knew of.
Yep, that
and, I, and he wouldn't have been able to get reception up here. But it's just... It's crazy how incapable... a lot of us have become when operating without a cell phone, at least when you're used to dealing with it.
Yeah.
So I just say, like, I couldn't make a 4-minute trip outside of town without my GPS or cell phone without it becoming kind of a big deal.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Bunch of punks.
All right. Would it have been, okay, so it was probably under an hour. Would that have been appropriate for me to call the authorities to say, where's my missing my friend Seth? And I would have been crying like a baby. My friend Seth, I'm missing my friend Seth. So what's the appropriate amount of time?
I've abandoned my boy.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We'll do some headlines coming up next. We'll dig deeper into the Astros. Hey, we got some hot Thursday night action, a little football going on tonight. We'll get you set up for that as well, give you everything going on here at Texans training camp today. We'll do that coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
Let's get to headlines, and let's start with the Texans. We get a padded practice today, day off tomorrow. Vikings game on Saturday, a game you can hear right here on Sports Radio 610. Starts at 3:00, noon for Texans countdown. You got your Texans countdown hammies all stretched out. You ready for pregame on Saturday?
I'm not yet, but I will be.
You,
Sean,
will be good.
Being on a Saturday, you're gonna have to remind me on Friday. Because I got a long drive and we both have a long travel day and everything.
So yep.
I'll be, you're taking tomorrow off. I'll be in with Brandon tomorrow.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, that'll be good. That'll be good. We got a padded practice today. I guess the only real news yesterday, it was only a walkthrough. There was nothing going on that anybody should be like, hey, what did you see out there yesterday?
Right.
It was literally just skeleton walkthrough stuff. But Damian Pierce and Christian Harris both back doing practice things. They were in pads on Tuesday, but working out on the side. If you had just dropped into practice yesterday and that was your first look at the Texans, you didn't know any news, you wouldn't know any different about Christian Harris or Damian Pierce.
You wouldn't know that they weren't going to be active participants or whatever,
right?
Yeah, they were out there doing all the football things. So it's a step forward, and it's some of those things you're actually not allowed to do until you kind of clear a certain protocol. So it looks like both of those guys will probably be back pretty soon. I think with Christian Harris especially, what I'm hoping is that because it was such a mysterious injury that they really, really were just waiting. They wanted to be sure he felt really good and rock solid for a long, long time before they start. And they're going to ramp him up very slowly. So I'd be surprised if you saw either of those guys in the first preseason
game. I agree with that, yeah.
But I think you might see him in the joint practice against Carolina.
I think they need to start doing it. I think plunking them down in a game with only presumably one. Now, we don't know if they're going to participate in this padded practice today or if they're back doing stuff on the side field because there was no contact yesterday.
I think the one notable absence from yesterday that we might want to keep an eye on is that Nick Chubb left the practice early on Tuesday and then wasn't out there for the walkthrough yesterday.
Correct,
So might be nothing at all, might be something. The guy he's coming off of not just a horrific knee injury from a couple years ago, but also a broken foot during last year's season.
Yep. And it's a shame because that practice on Tuesday, the one that he left early, was his best practice he was having.
Yeah.
He had started to look, kind of like.
And I think that went hand in hand with actually the offensive line doing some good things with the blocking. I think if he's not his old self, if he's got good blocking in front of him, I can totally see where he can be a valuable part of your team and just being able to churn out yardage. And then maybe along the way he regains some of that burst, but obviously it all starts with the blocking.
No question. All right, let's flip over to the Astros. Here's what happened yesterday.
Marlins salvage a game in this series with a 6-4 win. Astros now 2-4 on the road trip. Marlins got most of their offense against Spencer Arrighetti in his return from the injured list. Gave up 5 runs in 3 2/3. Astros tried to rally but couldn't quite come up with those tying runs.
All right, so there you go. 6-4, the final score. I would have signed up for a series win before that. The Marlins had been a very hot baseball team coming into that series. I'll take 2 out of 3.
And the Astros had come into this series losing 8 of their last 10.
Yeah.
So a series win, especially with Arrighetti coming back and not – It wasn't a good performance out of him. There was a little bit of bad luck. Four infield hits on very soft contact. But he also hung some pitches out over the plate. So got four strikeouts on the day, or was it five?
Five strikeouts
on the day. So it was. I think it was something to build on. Nothing to be alarmed about, but
yeah,
nothing to have a parade for.
I think that's a good way to put it. Nothing to be alarmed about. You know, we'll see what happens next time out. Christian Javier, reportedly, according to Joe Espada, could be back with the big league club when they return home next week.
Yeah.
I'm hoping for Monday because I'm going to be there. I'd love to be there for Christian Javier's return. That's compared to his teammates, this is a pretty rapid return for Christian Javier. Had his surgery late May of last year.
It's been relatively
like 14 months.
It's been relatively void of setbacks.
It's been totally void of setbacks. Reported setback. There's been none.
It felt overly optimistic to say that he might be back in mid-July, but that was about mid-July was when that was the early date that people had said. So I'll take August 7th and call it a win.
I'll take him anytime, man, and hopefully he's close to what he was a few years ago.
And look, you know, who knows if Blue Ball, like where he, there's guys now with Javier and however Blue Ball might factor in over the course of the second half of the season, as well as others of guys that have piggyback started before, have been either relievers or starters, and you start to see where you can hodgepodge in the playoffs, where the Astros have had a lot of success at times just mixing pitchers in, mm-hmm. and using things a little bit unorthodox. Like that's the total resources available to you feels a lot better right now.
These guys need to work out, though, at least a couple of them. Chandler Rome had a good piece about that in the last day or so. I think it was on the heels of Arrigetti's outing yesterday. I think he wrote it. The piece went up last night. That look, Dana Brown didn't go get any pitching at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
Like their trade deadline acquisitions are going to be Spencer Arrigetti, Christian Javier, Luis Garcia with this new throwing motion that he has,
mm-hmm.
and JP France. Like they're banking on that versus paying whatever the retail plus 25% was for going and getting Dylan Cease or whoever.
Well, yeah, and Sean Dubin as well. You know,
in the bullpen. Yeah. It's a calculated risk on Dana Brown's part to not go get any pitching, and so far, 0-for-1 so far on that, going with that approach.
They've had such bad injury luck that it kind of just skews your perception of how the GM should operate.
Yeah,
and it's hard because you also wonder, okay, wait, is the way they're handling these injuries or something about the process? If it's their fault, then I can't give them a pass on it. But you can never say with certainty whether it's just bad luck or something with the system.
Yep. NFL Thursday night action tonight. We had the Hall of Fame game last week. Now we're really into preseason week one. Of course, the Texans will play on Saturday. The three games tonight, I'm intrigued by two of them. The Colts and the Ravens.
Mm.
Anthony Richardson is going to start this game. Daniel Jones is going to start the next game. So this is a true QB competition that we'll talk about in the 7 o'clock hour.
They are co-quarterbacks.
Co-quarterback. It's on the depth chart. It's an or.
Everybody knows that you always feel awesome about having co-quarterbacks.
For sure. It's the old saying.
It's my old saying. It's so true. Is that if you have two starting quarterbacks, you have none at all.
That's right. That's
it's
right.
Just so rare. It's so rare that you see the exception to it. It's just, I mean, every now and then, okay, well, we've got an older quarterback, but we've got a young guy that can come in and give him some, you know, be the short yardage quarterback or something. But if I were the Colts, I would probably just want to throw all my eggs in the Daniel Jones basket if I were the Colts. As somebody who hates the Colts, I like that that's their best option. But I'm also living in a world where, man, Sam Darnold, Geno Smith, Baker Mayfield, you count these guys out at your own peril. So we might see the most incredible version of Daniel Jones we've ever seen with the Colts. You can't write these quarterbacks off like you used to.
So it'll be Anthony Richardson going against the Ravens. I'm assuming we'll see zero Lamar Jackson tonight in that game.
I also think the Colts are hoping that Anthony Richardson has yet another one of his bi-monthly injuries.
Do you think they're hoping he makes the decision easy for them?
I don't think they like Anthony Richardson.
What? So they should just cut him then, right? Or are you just doing it for the optics?
He was Jim Irsay's favorite child. And,
guess who's not around anymore?
But his daughter is, and all the weird dynamics that go into it.
Yeah, I suppose. I'm glad it's their problem.
Yeah.
Bengals Eagles in another game tonight. I don't know what the Bengals and Eagles, if they're going to play Jalen Hurts and Joe Burrow. Raiders Seahawks is interesting. Because that's Pete Carroll going against his old team. Does Pete Carroll seem like a coach who would pull out all the stops in preseason week one to beat his old team, the Seattle Seahawks.
Knowing that as a guy who'd been, he's been
I
in the NFL
yes.
for probably, am I even exaggerating? He's been in the NFL for 5 decades.
I mean, USC for a little while.
He understands and knows just how meaningless these games are. No, I think Pete Carroll fights his own, whatever internal temptation he has to be petty. I think he fights it and he just treats it like
God,
a normal
that'd
preseason
be
game.
Hilarious if Geno Smith played the whole game. Because Geno's in revenge mode too, you know.
That's
I mean,
true.
They shipped him out.
Yeah.
So it's that's it. I'm slightly
it's a hollow,
intrigued.
Whatever, that would be a hollow vengeance if that's what you choose to do.
Yeah.
Like, what are you going to do afterwards? If that vengeance works out, like, oh, yeah.
We beat you in the preseason.
We beat your pants. We beat the daylights out of you in the preseason. Sure, we had a couple of starters end up on injured reserve, but it was worth it.
Yeah. Okay, we got a few answers here on how long I should have waited to call the authorities when I thought
you might have been missing last night.
Yeah. Yeah. For everyone else, an hour. For Seth, give it a couple weeks.
Yeah, I might have just decided to go on a wilderness retreat.
Yeah.
You know?
There's no reason.
An abandoned summer camp that I stopped at on the way here. I might just sleep there tonight.
You should.
I should bring a crowbar and pry open
the
one
cabins?
Of them. Yeah, okay, so there's this vacant Girl Scout camp, for those of you who didn't hear the story. And it was like...
Story just got 20% creepier.
Dusk time. It was like dusk at the... When I pulled off on a dirt road because I needed to go potty, okay?
Yeah.
And it turns out there was this this vacant Girl Scout camp there. But all boarded up and locked and everything, and it felt like a horror movie. So I drove deeper into the woods where it got darker and darker,
should,
and the road got narrower and narrower.
That's what you do, man.
Somebody asked, like, "Hey, Seth, how'd you know the cabin doors were locked at the Girl Scout?" Yeah, because they had padlocks on them.
No, you could see the padlocks.
I didn't go around and be like, "Hey,
you sure? Are you sure?
Are you college age counselors around?" Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Text in. 713.
I got some s'more supplies in my trunk.
713-5724.
Go get them out of the trunk for me.
4610. Further in the trunk. Lean in.
They're in the back
They're
of the
in
trunk.
The very, very back. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. We head into the 7 o'clock hour. Hey, which position battle for the Texans is the most intriguing right now? ESPN did one for all 32 teams. DJ Bienemae did the one for the Texans. Do we agree with DJ that this is the most intriguing position battle? And there's three teams that have a position battle going on that is just a signal that your season is sunk. Mm. We will get to that coming up next.